It is the Blitz, AM 1450 KATE, Monday to Friday, 2:30 to 4. Mitch Widmeyer here with you until 4 o'clock, and we're going to the phone lines. Our guest today is he's kind enough to take time every Friday afternoon to hop on the program. It's Brandon Warn, who covers the Twins for Zone Coverage. You can find his work there at that outlet. Go to zonecoverage.com, click on the Twins tab at the top of the page. Brandon, as always, we appreciate the time. You cannot duck this question, and it's not like a hot-button issue or anything. It's not going to get you in hot water. But for whatever reason, I've asked two people the last 2 days, and they have just beaten around the bush. So the Twins win last night against the Brewers. Is it two-game sweeps or one four-game sweep against Milwaukee?
Oh, I'm going to say four-game sweep. I think you just got to roll with it and make it sound a little more impressive. So I'm going four-game sweep.
Is there a, like, how do they actually decide? Because we see these series with, like, Kansas City and St. Louis just did the same thing. I'm sure the Mets and Yankees have the four-game series. The Cubs, White Sox did it earlier this year. Does baseball have a rule? Do they quantify it as two-game series or one four-game set? Because it does, like, at the end of the year, I guess, for the semantics of it, if people want to look back and say, how many series did the Twins sweep? Does it count as two or one?
Oh, that's a good question. I would guess it's probably two because of travel. So, in that case, I would guess it's two-game sweeps. But now you got me thinking. I'm going to ask the PR staff at Target Field when I go back next week and see what they have to say about that, because they have to chart that stuff for the game notes. So I'll see what they say.
And see, that's why I was kind of curious about it. I know it's somewhat of a minute point, but I do wonder if it counts as – I was kind of with you. I think it – I always view it as like one four-game series because you're playing the same team 4 days in a row, but because it's two at Target Field in this case and two at Miller Park, I do wonder how they judge it and how they view it and count it up at the end of the year, right?
Yeah, and the reason it's questionable is because the games are right next to each other and the series are right next to each other. You know, if it was two games now and two games, you know, separated by a series, obviously those would be separate series, but it does become a little bit more ambiguous since it is all in straight days. So yeah, I'm gonna have to ask the PR staff what they say about that, because that is a little confusing and it's a good question.
Either way, the Twins take all four from Milwaukee. How pleasantly surprised have you been, and were you, with the bullpen, especially in this series?
Yeah, you know, the bullpen, last time I looked, had like a 3.77 ERA over the last 30 days, more than a strikeout per inning, and a ground ball rate at 50%. I mean, those are all things that will make any pitcher successful, and when you're doing it as a group, that's great. And again, too, I'm sure that people are wondering how they've done it without Brandon Kinsler, but somebody had a good tweet last night. It was, who knew that the Twins wouldn't be that rocked by losing a guy who pitched three innings per week? And so, yeah, you know, it's not really that big of an issue. And granted, Matt Belisle has really picked up the slack. They've had guys step in. Trevor Hildenberger's been great. But honestly, too, even the guys at the front, Dylan G has pitched, I think, seven scoreless innings with nine strikeouts. And they've had some youngsters. Alan Buznitz has pitched well, but very infrequently. Tyler Duffy's been good of late. You know, it's a bullpen that I think is rounding into form. Again, it's not going to go toe-to-toe with the Yankees, and nobody really can, or even the Dodgers or anything like that. But I think most of the answers for this bullpen are in-house right now, and that's an encouraging thing.
The offense has also come alive in this recent little stretch run that they've been on, winners of five straight. They've done it with the long ball last night. They did it playing small ball. I think they had 11 hits, 10 of them were singles, three by Buxton, three by Maurer. The one guy I want to target in on here, though, Brandon, the offense coming alive with Jorge Polanco. How unpredictable has this little surge been?
You know, for him, I always thought he was going to come full circle just because the approach is so sound. Doesn't strike out much, takes his walks, doesn't usually chase pitches, but that's kind of what he got away from, was staying inside the zone when he struggled. Is you could see a guy that wasn't trusting his process. And when you go through your usual process and don't see results, unless you're like a Joe Maurer who's been doing it for a long time, you start to question, you know, maybe I was doing something wrong and succeeding in spite of myself all along. And so I think there were times where he started to chase, you know, breaking balls in the dirt and not, you know, keep his shoulder closed against changeups and all that stuff. And so I think what we've seen is the Twin staff just saying, look, we know you're talented. We're going to stick with you. You know, we might back off you a little bit to give you some time. And because Aray Adrianza and Escobar had been playing well, you know, give them some time as well to play it short. But you're still our guy. And if you can get back to where you were, we'll be happy to give you the job back. And I think he's done pretty much everything they've needed him to do so far in August. I think he's like 14 for 28 or something like that, and you know, again, that's not a stretch you can really predict, but he's looked really good.
Have you noticed anything like mechanically with him changing at the dish, or is it a clear mind that time that he sat out? I know you had mentioned a couple weeks ago he's dealt with some pretty rough stuff off the field during this season as well, which no doubt probably had some toll on him.
Yeah, his grandfather that I believe raised him passed away, and he went away for the funeral for that, and he had already kind of started to struggle, so I don't want to put that all on him and all on that situation, but I haven't seen anything mechanically necessarily as far as moving his feet or opening up his stance or anything. It just seems like it was just a really, really big funk, and the hard thing to remember is that development is not linear for players. You know, you hear people say so often when they talk about young players, he's young, he's only going to get better. Well, some young guys don't get better. Some young guys get worse. Some young guys stay the same. Some young guys get better, then they get worse, and then they get really good. And so it's just, I think, the ebbs and flows of being a young player in the league. And, you know, the success came so easily and so quickly for Polanco that he just needed some time to kind of see the league again and get real comfortable.
Brandon Warren, our guest this afternoon here on the Blitz, covers the Twins. Find his work, zonecoverage.com. So the Twins win five straight, and all of a sudden they're only a half game out of the wild card race for the second spot and 3.5 out in the Central. So what's going on lately now? All these other teams that were above the Twins have started to fade a little bit.
Yeah, Cleveland has been, for the most part, good. They got Danny Salazar back, and he's pitching well, but Carlos Carrasco has struggled in turn. But the Royals have really struggled. Danny Duffy's been up and down. Trevor Cahill, they just acquired before the deadline. He's on the disabled list now, and I don't think they've hit much lately. And so the only thing they've really hit is the skids, so to speak. But, yeah, the Twins have done a nice job. The other thing, too, is that Seattle's been ahead of the Twins now, and James Paxton left the start with a pec injury last night. And again, for as great as he's been an injury risk pretty much his entire career. So sometimes, you know, as much as it's, you know, we talked about how it's hard to stay in the wild card race because teams are winning every night, it is a bit of a war of attrition, too, in that some teams have to lose, too. And then you throw in injuries and you throw in that all these teams have flaws. It's not like they're chasing the Dodgers or the Astros necessarily. And it is a little bit more encouraging. And if you look at the projections, I looked at 538, FanGraphs, and Baseball Prospectus, they all have a team with 82 or 83 wins winning the second wild card. That is extremely doable for the Twins right now. They're one game over 500, I believe, at 57 and 56, I want to say. 82 wins is only two games over 500 at the end of the year. If the Twins can play 500 ball the rest of the way, like they have to this point, they're going to be in the mix. So, again, that might not mean that an 82-win team makes the playoffs. Maybe there's going to be a team that just is an outlier. But they're in the mix, and I think that's all you can really ask for right now.
And one of the kickers going the way of the Twins, if we want to view this optimistically from a glass-half-full perspective, because I was going to ask you, do you view this as a tease? I mean, they're only a half game out of the second wild card spot, so I don't want to ask the question, like, can you see a path where they emerge? Because right now, they're right in this thing. The one thing that leans their way as well is out of all these teams that are vying for it, Brandon, the Royals, the Twins, Mariners, the Angels are in there. The Twins have the second easiest remaining schedule the rest of the way, which certainly bodes well for them.
Yeah, I saw, I think it was Mike Petrillo of MLB.com had tweeted that. He does a lot of work with StatCast and stuff. Really smart guy. So, yeah, if they're playing the Detroits and the White Sox of the world while the other teams have to face Houston or whoever, that really does play into the Twins' favor. And again, you can't take away the wins they've had already this year. And so you can say run differential, so on and so forth, they've overachieved. But at the end of the day, they've won 57 games. They're two wins shy of how many games they won all of last year. So you can't take those wins away, and it doesn't mean that the Twins are going to continue to play at a negative run differential the rest of the way. And I think it's encouraging what the offense has done lately. The bullpens look good. And, man, Bartolo Colon has locked down a rotation spot. They're looking at some youngsters with Adalberto Mejia on the shelf. I think it's more encouraging than discouraging right now.
Always enjoy our time with him. He is Brandon Warren, our guest this afternoon on the Blitz. His work can be found at zonecoverage.com. One of those young guys, it didn't last too long last night, but what were your takeaways from the start by Dietrich Enns?
I think that you're looking at a physically gifted lefty. Just ran into some trouble early with command and throwing strikes, but you can see what the team liked in him. First starts are always so difficult to evaluate because very few guys come up and give you five innings or 100 pitches or even six innings, anything like that. But I think you can see, again, This is a guy who had a sub-2 ERA for his entire minor league career. So, he's obviously older than you'd hope. He's 26 at Triple-A, but Tommy John surgery and some shoulder issues this year have kind of pushed him back. But, too, if the Yankees weren't as loaded pitching-wise as far as big bullpen and stuff, he might have pitched last year in the big leagues. He also hit an innings limit last year, too. But, I think he's an intriguing lottery ticket, and I think you should give him at least one or two more starts before they make a decision on him. But I don't know. They've got some other guys to look at, too. They got Tim Melville. They got Nick Turley again. I know I go to bat for him a lot, but he's been really pitching well at Rochester. And then Steven Gonsalves made his first start at AAA Rochester yesterday. Got hit with a line drive on the left side, but still pitched 7 innings, 7 strikeouts, and he just looked overall very, very good. Could be a short stop in Rochester for him, too, if the Twins think he's ready, because they do have some open 40-man spots.
That you're feeding into my next point perfectly, because I was going to ask you, despite the, I don't want to say lackluster, but just he didn't go that far into his start last night, he being Dietrich Enns. I don't know if Paul Molitor spoke to this or not after the game, but do you think Enns will get another start when his fifth day rolls around in the rotation? Because you just brought up some of those other options. I know Hector Santiago, I saw, he didn't look great the other afternoon at AAA for Rochester. So do you envision Enns getting another start in the rotation?
Yeah, I think he'll get at least one more. I thought maybe Dylan G made sense to get a look at, but I think they like him in the role he's in because he gives them some really nice depth for if Mejia, when he's healthy, only gives you 4 innings or anything like that. And he's really taken to the bullpen well. If you stretch him out, you might end up exposing him a little bit more. And again, he's not a guy that's had a terrific MLB career as far as strikeouts or ERA or anything. So in smaller doses, guys like that have their stuff play up, and I think that they want to stick with that. So they want to give some youngsters some more looks, and I think they'll give Enns another start, maybe a little longer leash, to work into and out of trouble if it comes down to that. And from there, I think that's when they'll evaluate him. I think his first start was kind of, dip his toes in the water, but also push back Gibson, Berríos, and Santana to make the starts in Detroit because those are the three guys they want taking on the Tigers.
Did he have more speed than you thought when he legged out that infield single? Because it was slowly hit and it was a little dribbler, but I thought, okay, he's going to get thrown out by like a step and a half, 2 steps, and he beat it out.
Well, I'll say this. I don't think Bartolo Colon would have even been out of the batter's box yet. But no, he's a pretty good athlete. I think, as Bert Blyleven would probably say, pitchers are the best athletes on the field. But, yeah, he got down the line pretty quick. I think he hit the ball to Oswaldo Arcia, his little brother. And that was the other funny thing about that series. I said that Oswaldo Arcia is no more Orlando Arcia's brother than I am Byron Buxton's brother, because look at the lack of physical resemblance. He's a right-handed hitter. He's a shortstop. He's a good defender. He's sound in terms of fundamentals. Nothing about him resembles Oswaldo Arcia. It cracks me up that they're even related, let alone brothers.
All right, you have sprinkled in this guy's name twice already, so I know you want me to ask about him. It is Bartolo Colon. Can you explain what we have all been witnessing revolving around his last 3 starts?
Well, he looks resurrected, and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, the guy's 44, wants to pitch till he's 45, but the velocities look good. He's still primarily a fastball guy. He works off that with a slider and a changeup, but I think he's kind of tailored his repertoire a little bit to knowing, look, for the last 5 or 6 years or whatever it is, I've thrown fastball, at 88, 89. If I mix in some sliders and changeups, give him a different look. He had some guys in that Rangers series where he had the complete game just way out in front of that changeup. They just were not expecting it at all. And so he's just been excellent. I mean, I know the numbers probably are more that he's looked okay to, maybe just average, but he's gotten better with each start. The complete game, he gave up 4 earned runs, and then it was, I think, 7 shutout innings in Milwaukee. I don't know what's next. A no-hitter, maybe? Well, if it is, I'm going to go buy some lottery tickets. But he's looked progressively better, and even if he only gets you to the end of the season and he runs out of gas and retires, for the big league veterans minimum prorated for as long as he's been on the team, that was easily worth it. And you just send a thank you card to the Braves saying, thanks for giving us a trade deadline acquisition that didn't cost a thing.
If I bring up the word sustainable and I'll try to apply it to Bartolo Colon, do you think he can keep up just the quality start pace? I'm not expecting him to go out and shut out a team for 7 innings like he did against Milwaukee, or even go the distance like he did 2 starts ago, but do you think he can keep up with some consistency the quality start pace that he's been on?
Yeah, I do, and that's just pitching is so weird. You can have all the measurables, the 95 mile per hour velocity and the repeatable delivery and the body for it, and it just doesn't work. And then you got a guy that looks like Colon, but he just knows how to pitch. And I'm not going to bet against him. If he can give him six innings and three earned runs every single time out on average the rest of the way, the Twins will be thrilled with that. And I see no reason that he can't do that for the next, I think it's probably six or seven starts or whatever it is that he's got left. I absolutely think he's capable of that.
Brandon Warren with us this afternoon on the Blitz. Series starts tonight in Detroit. I view it like two out of three would be nice, especially with Berríos tomorrow and Santana pitching Sunday, right?
Yeah, and they're not going to get Verlander, and who knows, maybe Verlander will get traded. We've been talking about that now for a while. It sounds like he can, if he's traded, void his contract into the end of the year. There might be a provision in the CBA or something like that. But, yeah, so to not see Verlander, who, again, he's not the Justin Verlander of old. He still throws pretty hard, though, and he can dial it up and give you a good start every now and then. But to see Matt Boyd and Anibal Sanchez and, I think, Jordan Zimmermann, I mean, that should be a two-out-of-three slam dunk. But you know what? We thought that about Oakland. That didn't happen, and they should have taken care of business against San Diego, and that didn't necessarily happen either. So we'll see. You know, it's hard to count our eggs before they hatch. But if they can sweep there and just come rolling back into town, you know, a little boys are back in town blaring over the loudspeakers, that'd be pretty great too.
Do you foresee Verlander getting dealt by the end of this month? And if so, who are some of the likely suitors that you could see linking up with him?
It sure feels more likely now than it has at any point before. I mean, I think, you know, with the salary and him not pitching to his usual standard kind of seemed unlikely because the Tigers are probably going to want to get something for him. But, man, the more smoke that we see makes you wonder if there's a fire brewing underneath. And in that case, you know, I wonder if Houston doesn't go get him as an answer to Yu Darvish going to the Dodgers. That Dodgers trade was brilliant, by the way. Darvish as insurance for the three injury-prone lefties for the Dodgers, you know, that was brilliant. But, and again, I know the Astros aren't going to try to answer the Dodgers necessarily, but maybe they answer the Yankees getting Garcia and Sonny Gray. And so, you know, with Lance McCullers struggling with injuries and Dallas Keuchel has been, you know, not as good lately, you know, they've got some interesting things going on for such a great team that just got swept by the Chicago White Sox, for crying out loud. So I don't know. Maybe it's 50-50, but I think Houston is probably in the driver's seat if something happens there.
I wanted to zoom out the microscope. You brought up a couple of those teams, the Yankees, the Astros, and I wanted to look at the playoff race because to me, and I know it's only August 11th today, Brandon, but to me there's only two spots that are really up for grabs that I see changing or could change, and it's the second spot in the AL wild card and then in the National League in the Central. Like, to me, Washington's got the East, the Dodgers have the West, and unless Arizona or Colorado have some sort of like meltdown or collapse, they'll get the two wild card spots. So the Central's up for grabs, and then some sort of combination. I know the Yankees are only two up for that first wild card spot, but I do think some sort of combination of they and Boston get in. Central, I still like Cleveland. Houston's run away with the West since May. So that second AL wild card spot, NL Central, are the two that I see that could fluctuate. Do you agree, or do you see one of those other spots up for grabs?
No, I think that's right. I think you're looking at, you know, probably the Twins in the mix with the Rays and Mariners, depending on how you feel about the Angels. Obviously getting Mike Trout back helps, and even the Royals and the Orioles are in the mix as well, though that's, what is that, four or five teams within a handful of games. And that's the difficult part is not that you need to win a certain amount of games, but you have to jockey for position with five or six teams. So I agree with that. And as far as the NL Central, I mean, I think if the Cubs play to their ability, there's no reason they're only five games over 500 right now. But if you keep playing at this pace, the further you go into the season, the harder it is to make a run. So, again, I think I agree. Those are pretty much the two races that are in flux at this point. And you know what? I still think it's going to give us some great September baseball, and it's going to give us perhaps some interesting August trades. Because I don't think the teams that are way up are thinking about August and September now. They're thinking about October. You know, what do you need to win in October? And it's relief help and starters who can give you some depth. So and bench pieces. So I think it's going to be a really fun end of the season.
You wavering at all with your confidence in Houston? You mentioned they got swept by the White Sox. They're 2-8 in their last 10. What? Any idea what's going on? Is it just one of those slumps that they're going through with starting pitching kind of not being up to par? And do you expect them to kind of flip the switch at some point?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Keuchel got beat up pretty bad this last time out, and McCullers is, you know, he battles with health issues. he's a great pitcher, but you just got to keep him healthy. And, you know, beyond that, they've got McHugh they haven't had most of the season, and Charlie Mort missed a bunch of time, but is a pretty interesting pitcher. You know, they've got Joe Musgrove and Martis. They've got all these young guys that are interesting. You just got to kind of piece it all together. But that offense is just too good. They're just going to run away with it. I know they're 13 games up, and they're going to win it by 20 or more. And it's just incredible, though, how good that offense is. I mean, they're doing things that, like, the Rockies do at Coors Field for the whole season, and it's just unbelievable.
We'll finish up with a couple of points. I had this conversation yesterday and would love your input. Major League Baseball putting nicknames on jerseys at the end of the month. I'm a fan of the idea. The best one to me that I saw, and obviously I didn't see all of them, but it was Kyle Seager, who's going to rock Corey's brother on the back of his uniform at the end of August. Who stole the show for you?
Josh Fagley, player to be named later. I think he's he's had a fun career to this point. He's like a backup catcher for the A's. There's some funny ones all over the place with you know, all the different teams and personalities. And you got Simplicity. Chris Jimenez just rocked the G, just the letter G. That's it. So I think it's great. I think it would be fun if they did something charity wise, like sell player T-shirts or auction off the jerseys or something. But for now, I don't know what the plan is, but it's still a cool thing to try to infuse some fun into the game when they could really use some younger fans.
How predictable was Joe Mauer just putting Mauer on the back of his uniform?
Oh, man. I don't like the Twitter account Boring Joe Mauer, but you know what? Sometimes you just got to call a spade a spade.
We'll wrap it up on this. What was the best Twins one, nicknames that you saw? And I believe you wrote an article with ideas for Twins players. What one of yours did you like the best?
You know, the one I liked the most wasn't really a nickname. It's Grozicki on the back of Max Kepler's, and that's his dad's last name. And he had a hyphenated name when he was coming through the minors. I just like the idea that you can also give a nod to your lineage or your heritage, too. So I like the idea that, you know, some guys will have nicknames. I think Jorge Polanco's is Pimp in Spanish, which is like, dude, have you ever heard of Google Translate? And these guys didn't go to college, a lot of them, so they probably don't know that Google Translate existed. They didn't have to, you know, cheat their way through college Spanish. Of course, they speak Spanish, but so yeah, it's like, dude, we know what that means. Maybe just cool it a little bit. But I thought the Kepler one was pretty great.
Folks, go to zonecoverage.com. Click the Twins tab at the top of the page to find his work. Brandon, as always, thank you. It's appreciated.
You got it. No problem. Enjoy your weekend.
We'll wrap things up next for the week right here on the Blitz.